Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Beautiful Business Podcast, brought to you by The Wow Company. I'm your host, Ewan Sang, and this week we are joined by Thomas Deal. Thomas is the founder and managing director of Gotobe, who house two distinct marketing agencies, Gotobe Ethnic, a team of multicultural marketing specialists, and Gotobe Marketing, a solutions-based agency that helps UK brands tackle their biggest marketing challenges. They've won multiple industry awards, expanded into three offices globally, and worked with some of the UK's biggest brands, including the likes of Specsavers, Domino's, Western Union, Uber, the NHS, and many more. Alongside his responsibilities as the founder and managing director of Gotobe, Thomas is also the managing director and editor of magazine PL, an award-winning Polish news portal. He's an alumnus of the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses UK program, and he's a lecturer at the Solent University. In this podcast, Thomas and I discussed how multiculturalism isn't a checkbox exercise anymore. We also chatted about what agencies need to do, why, and how to do it when it comes to ethnic marketing. Let's get stuck in. Thomas, let's talk a little bit about the work that Gotobe does. What is it that you guys do, and how is it you go about doing it?
So we are a multicultural marketing agency, otherwise known as ethnic marketing, international marketing. There's various terminologies, but ultimately what we are doing is building a bridge between the 14.6 million ethnic minorities that are living in the UK and the brands that exist and looking to discover new audiences. How do we do this? We do this through different means and different channels. So we work with over 250 different ethnic radio stations, TV, newspapers, influencers who are helping us to reach the 14.6 million ethnic minorities that are living and work in the UK. We know that there is a huge need to change the representations, and we are starting to see a shift from brands towards it, but there's still a lot more work to do, and we are on a journey to make that change.
Sounds fabulous. So how many partners did you say there? 250?
So there's over 250 different ethnic portals, newspapers, magazines for different media outlets.
Phenomenal. And how do you go about kind of building the relationships with these? Because each of those channels, each of those outlets will be representative of a part of society, of a particular culture. And those cultures have their own traditions, don't they? They have their own kind of like, I spent a lot of time in Bristol. I was, you know, met my wife there, have my kids there. So, you know, Bristol's got a big part of my life. And I remember doing a project with the NHS way back when, and part of it was engaging with the Somalian community out there. And it was I found it really fascinating, you know, in terms of from a communications perspective, who you reach out to, the messaging that you need to take, little things kind of culturally, whether you agree with them or not, for example, you know, lots of the women and certainly the girls didn't have phones, for example, you know, so you had to kind of tailor your message in such a way if you were going to reach all sorts of groups. I mean, that's really significant to have 250 of those outlets, as I say, and I assume that's multiple kind of cultures and ethnic groups that are out there as well. How do you go about building these types of relationships with those outlets?
Yeah, just like you've mentioned, each one of those communities would have a different nuances, different traditions, different religions, but celebration that they would be taking part. And we want to equally, you know, be part of their life. How do we go back building those relationships? You know, it spans over 15 years of running the business. So each day we are in touch with different ethnic groups and we learning all about them and their, you know, media consumption, what they do. And based on that, we then look for those media, we reach out to them, see how we can work with them, what opportunities there are in terms of advertising, but equally, how can we sort of be part of the community? Because we don't just want to place an advert and that's it, and think like we've done a tick box exercise. We want to be part of their life. We want to make that change. So if it requires going out and speaking at a place of worship, we will do that. If it means we need to go down and stand in the front of an ethnic store for 4 days, 10 hours a day, we will do that. If it means that we need to go out and be part of an event and, you know, throw a big party at it, we will do that too. So it's ultimately looking out for the opportunities there are within the communities, but equally to get to know what is the challenge, the barrier that they're facing, and how our client's product or a service can make a difference. And it's all about building those connections, building those bridges. So that's why, you know, we spend a lot of time with the community, in the community. And we believe that because of that and the strong connections we have with the communities is allows us to get to them and deliver the message as authentically as we can in the language that they would understand.
Fabulous. And it is so important because, as you say, the lazy way of doing it would be, let's identify the channels, let's put the ads out there. But the real engagement will be that it sounds like the process you go through is like a real immersion within those cultures, within those parts of society. So you understand those pressure points, you understand the nuances, you understand the positioning that you have to do in order to engage with them in a meaningful way on behalf of your clients, but also just so that you can then, I imagine that feeding back that insight to your clients is one of the key values that you offer to them as well.
Absolutely. The things we pick up by speaking to people and the things and insights we are able to share, our clients go and say, can you actually do this in other markets? Can you do this in other communities? Can you do this for our generic consumers? And you don't always get the same level because the moment you go down to having these conversations, people very often open up to you because you've showed interest in the community and they will sort of reward you by giving you what in a way you need in order to make that difference. So that's why for us, you know, as much as digital media is great and fantastic and gives us an opportunity of reaching a wider audience, actually going down sort of the grassroots, the sort of traditional ways of marketing is super important. And somebody said to us the other day, oh, you're one of those agencies that's still stuck in the day. I said, well, actually, we're not stuck in the day. We are, you know, still doing what works and we're very proud of it. But equally, we do, you know, digital marketing, we do influencers, etc. It's a combination of both that gets us the results that we need.
But it's underpinned. It's underpinned by that understanding, isn't it? It's underpinned by that insight, by that engagement. Because it doesn't, in fairness, it doesn't matter what channel you use if your messaging doesn't connect. And if you, as I say, you know, that project I worked on with the NHS, Thomas, was to do with sanitary products for young women. And you try and go to the Somalian community with the typical Western communication of sanitary products, you go absolutely nowhere. You know, it wouldn't go past first pass. So, you know, you've got to have that level of understanding. You've got to have that level of engagement, really, to make the media work, irrespective of what the media is.
Absolutely. And this is why over the last 15 years, we've built a network of 4,500 brand ambassadors across the country. So these are our ears and eyes on the ground, listening out to what's happening in the community, feeding back to us. We then also have another level on top of it, which is key people of influence. So these are your key people within the community that people come to with problems and troubles. But ultimately, when you are running a campaign and you have an important message, they are happy to deliver it and they're happy to put the name alongside of it. And then it's the media outlets, it's the, you know, ethnic channels that we work with. So like you said, there is different complexity that you need to get into and there's different levels of it. And we do work a lot with the NHS. We work very closely with also other providers of government services and products, as well as utility providers who have got different challenges in different postcode areas. Mm-hmm. And we need to kind of drill down on those specific issues a lot of the work we do. So like you've mentioned, you know, Western communications or the generic message doesn't necessarily resist. There are various blockages and areas that, you know, you have to come across. And it's different community nuances, but also showing understanding of the different religions and people's backgrounds is super important in getting that communication right.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Just to zoom out slightly and just to take it up a level, Thomas, why do you think there has been this shift in regards to multicultural marketing or ethnic marketing? What, from your perspective, are the dynamics that are causing this change?
There's various. So the first is there is a lot more research being done in terms of underrepresentations and people believes is that today's, so when we do studies on the ethnic minorities, they constantly tell us that today's marketing, today's media doesn't represent them. That we're still stuck in this sort of ideal family size of 2+2. It's, you know, a same kind of family, no matter where in the country it is, and that there's, you know, that's everybody's the same. But when we actually look at the product and the consumptions, we then get a lot more information. And I will use an example of a hair product, for instance. You know, we have different types of hairs, whether that's an Afro hair, whether that's a Chinese hair, or whether that's a, you know, Western hair, there are different types. And they will require different treatments, different shampoos, and different conditioners. So having the same messaging to say, here's a shampoo that will do, you know, solve with everybody, it's not the same thing. So when we are sort of speaking to brands, we then think about, actually, have you changed the communications, or have you looked into it? What type of hair this, you know, would work in the ethnic market? And the answer very often is, no, I just thought, you know, having a standardized product would work for everybody. But actually, it's not that case. The Black Lives Movement is also very important. So having these sort of movements that really highlight those is super important. And I think the COVID and the impact of COVID on the ethnic minorities and the changing society that we live in has also shown that we need to be thinking more deeply and actually zooming in a lot more into who we're servicing and targeting, and ultimately who we might be ignoring, because a lot of the time it's the ignorance aspect that we need to be also open to and actually think about it. So that's what for us is the different changing. And what we're seeing is more and more companies want to ensure that they are 100% transparent, that they're 100% treating everybody equally. And if it means that they need to do 10 different campaigns for the same shampoo, they will go to that extreme and they will do that. They will do the work that is required to ensure that each community, each pot of people gets the right messaging in the right format, but most importantly, that is targeted and aimed at them and is reflective of who they are.
And surely that would yield better results from a ROI perspective. I mean, hopefully I'm not being too kind of naive here, but it seems to be sensible, not only from a progressive stance of, you know, better diversity and inclusion in our general discourse in society, but also just from a marketing dollar return perspective, surely they get a stronger response.
Absolutely. You've nailed it. I mean, the moment you have got more specific communications, more narrowed down communications, we see that clients get a better return on investments because people can reflect on it. They can see themselves being showcased and they can see that this brand has gone into the efforts of getting it to the right consumer and everything else. And as a result of it, they're also more loyal. So what we see with ethnic minorities is that once you get them as a customer, they are a lot more loyal than your typical other customer because they reward you for trying and doing your hard work in getting them in first place. And therefore, they will repay that back over a period of time by showcasing your loyalty.
Fabulous. And these, I mean, all these things, these words, loyalty, you know, these advocates, customer advocates and things like that, I mean, that's like the dreams of the agency owners and brand managers out there. So it seems like it's a really positive step and it seems like, you know, a really progressive step and perhaps, you know, dare I say, more people should be doing it. And so with this in mind, how can, you know, other agencies that are out there, how can leaders of these agencies educate both themselves and also their teams to avoid biases, I guess, is the best way of doing it. And for them to become truly multicultural in terms of their approach, in terms of, you know, their activity, what kind of advice would you give there?
First of all, if you're not able to service your client to 100%, look for a partner that is able to do. We work with a number of agencies already, big names, who come to us because we have a specialism. So sometimes it's a very straightforward conversation with a client to say, look, we can't deliver this piece of work, or we believe this product would be suited to this consumer, but we can't deliver it. But we do have a partner that we work with. And that's where somebody like us or one of our competitors would come in and quite happily work alongside of you. Secondly, is to educate the customers because we need to challenge our customers just as much as they challenge us by giving us brief. We need to go back to them and saying, what are we doing about ensuring that we are reaching 100% of the audiences? What changes do we need to do to the communications? And what are we doing to ensure that this message is being seen by everybody in the community and not just selected audiences? So challenge the brief by finding out the right mix and look out for those. Thirdly, start building relationships with key people in your community. Ask your colleagues. I'm sure you have a diverse team around you. People will have connections. See how they can get you in front of key decision makers, key people of influence within those communities, and listen out to their problems and then sort of pay back by, you know, putting a campaign that was going to solve the problems. Some of the best things we've seen and some of the best campaigns we've delivered is by actually going out to the community, saying we have got this particular client that we are going to work with. You know, what are some of the things that we would need to do or we would need to say in order for you to even consider it? And they will give you a endless list of things that they're looking for. And you can then match against your brief and say, actually, this works very well. And I think also have a look at some of the key campaigns that have been run towards the ethnic minorities and the results they delivered. So if your client is results focused, you might also want to think about, actually, do you know what? We might need to start doing a specific campaigns for specific groups. And then almost within one campaign, you end up doing six different campaigns. There are elements that you can reuse, but by going more narrow, you're able to deliver a better ROI.
Oh, goodness, that's really good. And flipping that question over, Thomas, what are the big no-nos that agencies must avoid? Because it could be a bit of a minefield in terms of some of the activities. So what's your advice when it comes to things to avoid when it comes to running multicultural campaigns?
Don't be stereotypical. Do your research. Avoid tokenism. Avoid tick box exercise. And I suppose remain being authentic. So that's the big ones, that whatever the communications, they need to be authentic. Don't just try to fake it because it's not going to work. People will see it through. So yeah, definitely do your research, avoid tokenism, avoid tick boxes. And if you're not the right person, be able to put your hand up and say, this is beyond me. I need a specialist. This is why, you know, the landscape of agencies is out there. We all specialize in different areas. If it's not your core product and you feel you're going to let yourself down, go and speak to somebody else. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to hand over the client to us or the brief. We can work with you. So just be open both with your client and yourself to say, can I actually deliver this? Or am I just going to try and make it? And we have done campaigns that didn't necessarily, you know, hit all the 100% boxes, but we've been able to put our hand up and say, you know, we've learned from it. This is what we need to improve for the next time. And we've done it and it worked extremely well. The next time around, we've got it.
So to your points there, that, you know, absolutely critical that the campaign for the client and from the agent perspective retains authenticity. You can't go in there, research, no tokenism, which again, to make sure that you don't do that. But I guess the big thing for agencies looking to collaborate, and again, with some of the communities that we've been involved with, for example, Agency Collective, there's been some instances of some beautiful collaborations and agencies kind of working together in that sort of way. And perhaps you could go into a little bit, Thomas, how you and the team have got to be work with those other agencies, because I imagine there will always be a sense of risk for other agencies. You know, the natural thing to do, especially when things are a bit tough and tight out there in different markets, you know, they get a brief, there's a budget attached to it. They need to try and keep as much of that budget as possible. But as you say, it's making that decision in your mind that, you know, we can't deliver or we're not in a position of strength to deliver on this. We need to bring some help in. So there's always be that hesitation, I suppose, with some agency owners to collaborate. What do you do? How do you help agency owners to kind of, you know, get other agencies even in terms of the work that you do to try and overcome that and deliver value for the client overall?
Yeah, so I suppose there's a few ways we can do it. So we work with a leading PR agency on a financial product service. They were very transparent and honest with the client and say, look, we can deliver the mainstream media, no issues. But when it comes to the specialism, we don't have that in-house. We will need to work with a partner. And they actually worked both the clients and the agency, interviewed us, picked the right partner, and then we worked side by side with it. We had to share a budget, but again, working with the ethnic media, they're a lot cheaper and a lot more affordable than some of your mainstream media. So your budget does get a lot further in the sort of ethnic space. Second example is we've worked with an agencies where they white labeled our services. And again, they sort of given us a small chunk just to prove it to the client, give them a sort of almost, you know, proof in the pudding. Because it worked very well, they came back and said, actually, do you know what? We're now going to do a bit of a change and we're going to spend this budget 50-50. So we will do 50 ourselves and we want you to work alongside. Third one, and this is where I would always encourage, and it doesn't cost anything, is to actually pick up a phone and speak to somebody like us and say, look, guys, we're working on this challenge. We're not sure if it's going to be right. Can you spare us a half an hour of your time just to walk through this brief and see what you think of it? And then we can go back to the client and think about whether we need to get somebody involved or we can probably give you within that hour a few indications of what you can do. It's within your space that you don't have to share the budget with us, or you don't even have to engage with us, but you were able to do some of the ethnic outreach and work with some of those publications and media, as well as communities yourself. And that might be a good starting point for you to start thinking then about how you're going to deliver that moving forward with your other clients and your other briefs that you're going to get, and sort of think about ensuring that your campaigns are hitting all the communities and not just one or a couple.
Yeah, it comes back to what we talked about before, you know, in terms of delivering ROI for your clients and generating that kind of impact, not only from a pound, shilling, pence, you know, financial kind of perspective, but also the impact from, you know, the diversity, equity, inclusion perspective as well for the clients. It's all driving more value for the clients at the bottom line.
Yep.
Last question for me on this section, Thomas, is what are your hopes for the future when it comes to multicultural and ethnic marketing? What would you like to see in the next 3-5 years?
So at the beginning, I've mentioned that only 1 in 5 brands currently reach out or is active in the ethnic space. I would like to see that changing and not just becoming 2 in 5. It's becoming more like 5 out of 5. So ensuring that we are all working towards ensuring that the marketing is inclusive. And it's not just about the ethnic minorities. There are various other subgroups we need to be mindful of. People with disabilities, different sex and religions, et cetera, et cetera. So there's so much more subsections that we need to be mindful. It's not just about the ethnic ones. So for me, I would love to see that in the 5 years' time that we can actually sit down and have this conversation where it's actually 5 and 5. We started at, as I said, 1 in 5, and we're seeing about 1.2 at the moment. It's moving slowly, but we need that to really accelerate. And we haven't got long to do that because the movement is getting bigger and there is more and more tractions, and we're seeing more and more pressure at all company levels that they need to do something more about it. So let's all work together and let's make that marketing more inclusive for everybody, not just for ethnic minorities.
Big thank you to Thomas Steele from Gotterby for joining us on this podcast. And a big thank you to you, our listeners, for listening to this week's Beautiful Business podcast.
Beautiful Business is powered by The Wow Company, who believe that business can be beautiful, that doing the right thing gets results. Wow believes that having a clear purpose and standing up for what you believe in is the secret to building a beautiful, sustainable business, something to be really proud of. If you're dedicated to building a beautiful business, check out wowco.uk/beautifulbusiness.